motion to approve the minutes from the May 22nd meeting.
Second. I'll second that, Mr. Chair.
Next discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Approve. Next item on the agenda, always remember Piper. Public comment on non-agenda items. Is there anyone from the public wishing to speak? Seeing, hearing none, we'll move on. Before we go into the next item, I also was pointed out to me the last time, this question for the commissioners, that we have not gotten around to officer elections for this year yet, and so I want to get that on the agenda. We can pick it up now or at the end of the meeting.
Question for Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate to message it out to the full commission to be here for a vote?
Fine with me.
I don't know what the protocol is.
Protocol is we should have done it.
I think that's fine.
I would slide that to the commissioner. It was more hands on that for a minute.
Sounds
good determination. Yeah. Late as we are.
Sounds good. Okay.
So we make a request for staff to put that on the agenda for the next one.
I think they're just conveniently forgetting. Okay, next item on the agenda.
Can I say something?
Say anything you want.
I want to make an official apology to staff. we're reacting a little bit extremely to Edison, so on, and I had no idea what was going on there. I talked to Jenna, she set me straight. these were not necessarily recommended. There were no chasings on between staff commenting. You guys have a way of using different colors, so you guys making comments. I'm learning that now, so I freaked out and I apologize for causing any disruption in the office.
Oh, you didn't at all. You didn't. There is no reason to apologize.
That's nice, too. Okay, let's move into a comprehensive plan for Ruby's element.
Okay, Megan has it up on the screen. I will hand out to you the remaining maps that we had talked about. Also, at the back is a copy of Gary's email. I thought that would be helpful.
Thank you.
So, the seismic site classification map, the seismic hazard map, liquefaction susceptibility map. And the fish and wildlife habitat map. So there's lots of maps in this chapter, and this would be your first look at all of them. So they're now included, and they've been revised by our GIS.
So this is a different set of ones in your packet?
No, those were not in the packet, so they're in addition.
Okay.
Yep. Yes. So we've included in your packet a clean version that hasn't changed substantially since our last look. We added a table of contents in and we revised, made a few revisions, but largely I just leave any more discussion up to you guys.
Question for you. On the legend, the city limits are red and the urban growth areas are orange. In previous maps, I thought I saw the urban growth as red. Is there any reason why there would be a change?
I'm pretty sure.
Your city limits is red on this one here.
We will double check that and make sure they're all consistent, but I'm pretty sure that is the standard.
No. Maybe I stand corrected.
I struggle with the colors.
Please disregard.
That's quiet here.
All right. So, Jamie, what I was hearing was outside of the handout you just gave us. Maps, you didn't have any other changes.
We had discussed a few items at the last meeting, minor and there are things to look into and change, and they were reflected. I can pull those up. And then I think.
I didn't see anything in red.
No. No, it's all accepted just to make it easier to follow. And then I think
we did some just minor formatting edits just to bring it consistent with other chapters in the content, but nothing substantive to that.
I have a question about the critical area element seismic hazard map figure.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first map in the handout?
Yes, the first map in the handout. Maybe I'm not sure what its purpose is, but I would look more for fault lines. But can you tell me why basically the entire city is almost shaded?
That's valley floor, so it's showing potential for liquefaction as the land shakes. So not addressing fault lines necessarily, but just.
And you're looking at the seismic hazard, right?
Yeah.
So
essentially, you're saying we're all going to slide into the aquifer, right?
Into a big thing of jelly.
So it's based on the soil load bearing capacity when subjected to amplification of earthquake ground shaking. So our GIS tech did a summary of what the changes involve in all the maps, city limits and parcels, and then where applicable, he put a description of what it's showing. So that's something our building official looks at, is the soil load-bearing capacity.
So you're referring to point 8
mm-hmm.
on
8A.
Page 1.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just wondering, how will that description be related to the map? Or will it in any way? So if we're saying in the seismic hazards section of the critical areas ordinance, is there that description that we might want added, and then to view the map, click here?
Sure. Yeah, you could do it that way. You could also add to the notes on the map. Let me see if it says, these are areas identified by King County subject to severe risk of earthquake damage as a result of seismically induced settlement or soil liquefaction. And it goes on. So there is a note in the on the figure itself, a direct reference to all the figures in the text. It's also a good idea. So we can make sure that happens with our final.
So let's broaden the question and say, is that something that's applicable throughout from map to document? Not that specific comment, obviously, but that relationship.
Between the maps and the text.
It's just a question.
Well, seismic hazard has a definition. I mean, if it does, it either is or isn't. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my question is just one more of, are we confident that there's a reference in the document?
Typically, I think all of our elements do that. They directly tie the figures to the chapter. So.
And the application of these maps, like you say, I heard you mention, building official uses it for load.
Mm-hmm.
Other purposes. What else does it got?
That would be the main one.
That would be the main one for sizes.
I thank you for pointing it out on the map. If it was something for the general public, it might not be sufficient as far as readability for printing it out always on the map by 11.
Mm-hmm.
No, typically those will be folded out 11 by 17.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that specific size comes with its own magnifying glass.
I see.
Well, I mean, 11 by 17, I think you can make the box a little bigger.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're
playing. That is ridiculous. It's what?
Reduce that problem a little bit.
So, how do they compile that data of the seismic hazard area? So it says that it's subject to amplification of earth ground shaking.
Mm-hmm. So I looked on the second page of the email from the GIS. He said data also comes from Washington State DNR, Department of Natural Resources. So that's a division of geology and earth sciences. So looking at soil types and earth underneath.
I feel like we're back to a FEMA map conversation. Just a wild swath and prove that it's not.
Mm-hmm.
This is not, again, this is not regulatory except for building may use this to determine suitable loads for structures and so forth, but we're not imposing specific seismic regulations.
That sounds, for example, it looks rather regulatory if the building official issues.
Well, under the building code, but not something that works in it by itself as a point.
My struggle in having such a wide picture is if I look at the erosion debris flow hazards map figure, which has the elevations on it, we have painted such a variety of landscape that it's not consistent with maybe just the floor level, but 300 feet higher than the floor in some instances. And are we creating unnecessary restrictions on certain property?
But this again isn't. Specific to North Bend regulations. So we've adopted the International Building Code and the International Residential Code, which will have criteria for structures. And I'm not very familiar with it.
It's more based on soil types.
You're saying it's based on geologic, U.S. geologic study, probably.
Soil analysis that provided those.
Yeah. And therefore, it's being painted for us by the typical soil being found in
the area, and then all of our individual projects have geotech reports that come with them. So if those inform something differently, then that would overrule this. It would be more site specific. So.
That's a curious question. I think that may fit in all this. I'm just imagining. So a private property owner comes in with a request for a permit that requires a geotech. The geotech survey says, well, actually, it's nothing like what the map says. Do we just change the definition or description of that particular property owner's geotech report, so we end up having this, instead of a flow, we've got a chunk out of it, and then it goes on to say the rest is everybody the same?
I would think so. I mean, that's what we do with our wetland map. We have potential identified, and then as we are there delineated, we modify the map. So FEMA is the only one that I know of that you actually have to go back to them, do a, you know,
right.
Regulated.
Prove you're not guilty.
Yeah.
Also, just looking at the location of the hotel going up, five-story mm-hmm. hotel, sitting right on top of the seismic area, but evidently the load is not significant enough to be debated upon. It's okay.
If it just, what changes is just basically how many piers go in the ground. Like originally, Bartels thought they were only going to have, I think, it was 11. They ended up with 19 pier foundations in the ground, and it's because of mm-hmm. this potential issue, but it wasn't because of this map. It was because of the specifics of the soil there. This is more of a, like Jamie just said, this is the best information the city has to conditions without individual studies being done, and the only way those get done is through film. And that's where, once we have that information, we update our map over time, just like our wetland map. Our wetland map is the one that usually gets affected mm-hmm. the most.
Streams are pretty constant. That doesn't change.
Yeah. Like, we'll find wetlands that, you know, we didn't know about until a development happened, or one that might not be there.
I appreciate the information. I'm okay moving forward. If we're going to have always a soils analysis done that can change the requirements or inform that they are true and correct, it's not that it, you know, prohibits construction, but more defines the construction standards. It's going to raise cost or, you know, make it adequate and safe for the people that are going to be there. So I think we can move on.
So in talking about moving on, we've got this information. Jamie's spotting the questions within that. Jamie's kind of explaining the update that came before us.
page by page people?
Trying not to be.
How about
my edit happens to be at the very front.
We can go through the document as we have edits, but I'm pretty easy on that too.
You're sure that page is in. Dick, do you have anything specific?
I told him to pull back and become less critical. I have a comment, but no criticism.
Okay, we don't want you to pull back too
far. I just, as I was reading it, I felt good.
Okay.
Nothing stuck in the eye.
Great. Well, so what I edited as sometimes do, it's not so much substance as it is workflow. And I printed it red line and black line. So you got red line on the side, black line on the other. Sure, how it comes out. And essentially, what I was looking at. Is some consistency in the opening. So, for instance, in the second line, second sentence, line 3, we went from geology, a technical word, to water, you know, vegetation, wildlife. So, in my mind, let's be consistent. So, it's little things like that. And I'll just let you read through that and see what you think.
Didn't you say you were a professor?
I have been known by that title in previous lives.
It looks like the last sentence together in North Bend vision statement. That didn't change. But it showed up as a
last sentence was wholly added.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and this is your accepted version.
Yeah.
Got it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So you've got on one side of the page okay. You have it red line so you can see where I made changes.
Okay.
And the back side is just clean. So
and also, he made a hard return between line 11 and 12.
Okay.
To separate King County. Paragraph. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Good edits. Can I say?
Questions? Everybody's happy?
Happy.
All right.
Happy.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. So signed.
Just a quick clarifying question for the recorder. There was kind of a half motion there.
Yeah, I made a motion to change the text in the introduction.
Can we call administrative just done?
Yeah, I wanted to ask that. Do you guys want to just do things by consensus? It makes it simpler.
I think we should get out the dice.
And then we'll do one motion at the end.
Sorry.
This is an easy one.
I've been moved tonight. I'm
happy with that.
Okay.
Anybody else for page 7?
I have a question on page 2.
Okay. And let's go to page 2.
The, on page 9, it's 3132. Special consideration for an address species or I don't know if we'll try it. We'll try it. It's not a listed species, right?
It is.
It is a listed species.
Come on, yesterday.
I
gave it back.
Are we concerned about water quality and temperature at this point? We're not really trying to make habitat for these fish that don't come up there.
Right. Yeah, so bull trout have not been found in the upper Chippewa Valley. Chinook salmon obviously can't get past the falls, so water quality is our issue.
This is the issue. Not sands and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And if I understand, it's also about temperature going over the falls, right?
Yeah.
We're charged to not harm the habitat downstream, you know, which our function, is the water quality and it's indirect.
Yeah. I've yet to meet the salmon that could do the falls.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, so the question, in terms of of application, such considerations are not really defined anywhere. What are you talking about when you talk about social considerations? That's the first two words in that.
That might be language directly from the GMA section. And
I know this just this is also a narrative paragraph, it's not codified.
Yeah.
But where do you find the definition of social considerations?
It may not be a definition, but I think, like Jamie said, it probably comes out of a statute about what are we doing with through GMA to address critical species.
If it doesn't specifically call that out in the GMA, even if it does, we can change the wording, you know, in addition,
the way that I read that particular sentence, and mm-hmm. actually most of this piece under the growth management detail, is, and that's what we then did. Right? So this mm-hmm. is kind of the preamble of saying, okay, here's kind of how it's flowing down to us, and we've taken that, and we've interpreted it, and here are our policies and goals and policies related to it. That's the way I read it. So
I'm trying to be John Q. Citizen of Tanner Road. Yes, it does. Mm-hmm. And just a freaking question. What are special considerations I have to worry about as a landowner along the river? I need to find it out.
I think what it's basically saying is that through the process, cities shall give special considerations, which then ultimately go to your critical area regulations, and those get those special considerations get adopted. So they're probably very, they could be as, well, they're pretty probably consistent across the board.
Buffers.
But some cities choose to have larger buffers than the minimum. So that's where that special considerations come into play, and they're kind of jurisdiction specific based on your.
As an example, yeah. We participate on the Supply Watershed Forum, and the Supply Watershed Forum is a group of cities and other organizations that come together to plan specifically to address the listing of salmon as well as other issues. And so through that process, we've had specific policy recommendations in the past that we've addressed in previous updates of our comp plan to address those listed species.
The only reason I'm raising this question is because it's such a lightning rod issue when you're talking about forests and other landowners. So when you're talking about, even in the introduction, when you're talking about generalities and just historical statements, when a person gets started into this paragraph, into the introduction, they like to be able to find a reference to that. Just so they can stay even with the current issue.
So, a couple ways to go. Do you want staff to confirm that that language is coming right out of GMA?
Those considerations bracket as found.
As found in. We get a reference to that code.
Just get a reference.
Yeah. Okay.
Just like you did here with your.
If that exists, it may just be that special attention. Or
yeah, I think it's as general as that. It's basically cities shall give special consideration, but...
Well, the first question is that actually language coming out of GMA? So, and if there is something more to it,
that could be two words that's condensed in a paragraph. Mm-hmm.
Who's special are we talking about? The landowner special, or the person who doesn't, the next door neighbor who doesn't want it to happen special?
Yeah. I don't believe that RCW 90.58.30 is the correct one. That one refers to the adoption of wetland manual. Mm-hmm. So,
we got the GMA to pop up there, man.
No.
And he's faster than Megan, who's desperately trying to find it.
I don't know. What did you say?
Beat the kid, Perry.
I just searched Washington State RCW 90.58.30.
Okay. Well then.
He's older.
We'll see if we can find more information on that when we move on.
Yep.
7, goal 3, which is protect the natural hydraulic habitat functions, scenic as well as recreational values of streams. So in that light, I'd like to propose two independent additional policies. CA 3.7, which would state, require the city to use biosolid and waste treatment options that remove the river as the primary and secondary discharge point, and that accommodates the maximum growth potential of our city. And that goes along with, I think, language in the Gray and Osborne report, which requires the city to think about maximum capacity, or at least maximum capacity in 20 years' time. And my reasoning behind that is, as we go through this exercise today, that we want the city to think about the amount of fees and permits that are going to come through with all the growth we have, and make sure that money is targeted towards a smarter and better system that's going to protect the water. And as we spoke tonight, the two concerns about water temperature and what goes into the water is directly related to what our output can be, especially in the summertime and longer time.
It's like you, I totally get it. I'm wondering, why isn't that in there already somewhere? That's my first thought. So the biosolid piece, well, you're talking about a filtration, natural filtration process that doesn't involve dumping it straight into the water, into the river. Okay. Do we have the science that makes that all make sense? That you guys know what he's talking about?
We're obliged to conform to state standards for water quality with our wastewater treatment plant. And so I believe it's a Class A standard that our water must meet before being discharged. And so it's going back into the river. From what I understand, as clean as, yeah, technically.
Except the city of Stone Hall just got cited for an excessive discharge.
So their system in Stone Hall, please correct me if I'm wrong, its primary and secondary points of discharge are watering public and community owned places.
Only part of the year, part of the timeline, I think.
One thing that we do want to think about, too, though, is we have a well system that we draw water from that would ordinarily discharge to the Suquamish River, the creek, the Boxy Creek, here, one of our water sources. And because we've taken from that source, we're actually required to mitigate, to mitigate, to bring flows back into the Suquamish River. Not for our wastewater plant, but if our wastewater plant is not discharging to the river, that may affect us having to provide more water back
from a well.
River.
And we're bringing that from Salal, right? That was the match, right?
I don't remember.
We have mitigation wells.
I think the important thing is we're kind of looking at different ways to ultimately build the wastewater treatment plant out in the most effective way. And part of that is all kinds of things, whether remodeling the existing plant, maybe using the trail to pipe it to Snoqualmie and do a regional plant. There's all kinds of different things, you know, being considered. So I think instead of dialing in on specifics, we know we have to meet the state requirements. And I think beyond that, right now, it might be premature to get too specific on the details, because in the end, it might, you know.
Well, what I'm hearing is it's not so much as specific, and certainly not about whether the plant be a regional one or our own, but I'm hearing more of an expression of wanting state-of-the-art.
Mm-hmm.
It reflects our values.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is more of one, how do these two goals get at that, and has Gary targeted the appropriate section, which feels about right to me as I went through the document? Are you guys seeing something else, either somewhere else in the comp plan, or some slight variation to the language that gets at that goal? What I hear, and I support Gary on this, is a strong statement of saying, live our values, we need to make sure that our facilities are doing that.
For protection, this goal is getting at the protection of the streams. So, and then I think in the capital facilities element, you're going to have more discussion about, you know, what type of wastewater treatment plant do you want and the functions of that. So this, I think we can definitely have a goal in there that is a little bit more broad than this, talking about what our vision is and our intent for the enhancing and protecting the stream habitat.
Okay, so
I hear that, and I guess I'm going to take issue because when Tanner or Wood River was annexed into the city, at that point the sewer system should have been upgraded to, well, as those connections are made, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. So nobody connected at that point. So maybe that's not a true statement. But when we're growing as a city and we're not improving that system, and I see a tanker truck there most weekdays emptying out the sewer plant, so I know that we're not meeting capacity there. So if we're going to make an investment, I want us to make one that's going to reflect the citizens' value. Because when I tell people, well, where do you think our wastewater goes to? They're like, what do you mean it goes back into the river? So yes, it's treated, but that doesn't maybe reflect what the rest of the residents are thinking is the right way to do it. And the science now is available to support not only a smarter system, but ways that it can make energy back into the city. So I'm not prescribing what system to follow. I'm just saying, based on our values, that we ought not to put it as our primary or secondary, but it can be an option. It's just not our first
two. I'm also hearing two paths from that. There's a capacity issue that we want to make sure that we're staying well ahead of the development. And then the second part is we want to protect the environment. So I don't know if we can,
and I think we want them hand in hand. Because if we're not ahead, we're not staying up with or ahead of capacity, right. We're not meeting our environmental goals. Mm-hmm. And Gary, I think in what you're saying, and hearing both the treatment of the water, which is the majority of what goes through a sewer plant, as well as the solids. And so I'm assuming you're speaking to both of those. It's holistically not just the water going to
it. I believe biosolid and waste, I should maybe say waste water treatment. So that is my intent.
Yeah, there may be a broader issue here. We have a lot of high-density septic systems along the river. They've been there for 30 years. What are we doing in the city to looking at the groundwater systems as we mentioned the septic?
So the staff can comment, but I believe under code is as those systems fail and you're in city limits that you would be required to hook up to city sewer at that time.
That's correct.
Yes.
And sewer system. In other words, the Tanner Road did not run all the way in. You got all the zones in the Tanner Road, all the septic system. That is this 84. Standard is 2.5 acres per system. I'm not going to connect a system. I worry about all the septics that are along the river that may be failing and that the landowners are not pretty close as they should. So, what do we do to think about updating those systems?
Well, so. What I hear on that is maybe an opportunity, and maybe there's a policy statement that's somewhere in there about encouragement for a program of conversion. So as Gary stated, if you're inside the city limits and your subject fails, you must convert onto any new development, you must be on sewer. This would be what you're talking about, though, is it's working, but it's working to perhaps an outdated, outmoded expectation. And or is there a program in there to mitigate and convert?
I'm looking at your very artful phrase of community values back in the 80s. I think you look at it, different ways of thinking about it, but I do think there's science about groundwater can be affected by high density septic systems, and that's what we spread it out back in the day to older acre. And we're still there working, people live in that profession.
I will say this, as somebody that lives with a septic system, is often you're going to have a problem and you're not going to know for years. And the damage is only reflected when you have somebody from the Department of Ecology studying the river and looking at the fecal coliform bacteria flows in it. And so as they test that, they can discover the problem but have little insight, you know, until they get enough point testing to know where that problem is. So obviously, if it's along homes along the river and it's human waste, then that's pretty evident that you have somewhere along that stream of failure.
Which could also be groundwater well testing.
I'm not going to say that I'm an expert with septic systems, but I've worked with them for quite a while. And the acreage point, cities, all of the cities, are set up to plug everyone into the sewer. Outside, counties deal with septics.
Yeah.
And that's more a form of economics. But if you ask septic engineers, read their bias, they'll tell you that the working septic system is much more environmentally friendly than piping it down to the city to handle and then sending it out of the river, quote, the water. Serving it on site, it doesn't have the impact that the process of putting in a pipe, sending it across town, treating it with whatever they treat to, and then sending it out into the body of water. The septics are far more environmentally friendly on a unit-by-unit basis.
Keeping functioning appropriately.
Well, and that's the piece. King County's gotten all over that. There's a lot of folks that are living out in the rural areas that are tweaked because the King County official coming and just walking into their backyard now to inspect their septic system.
Right. Well, I've had a few.
But there's a monitoring process, and if the septic system is working properly, which if it's treated and maintained, it'll run generations. They don't fail. There's no mechanical. The only reason they fail is because something's changed. Somebody drove a truck over the system, for example. Something happened.
Just one final point on that. I had my tank emptied, and so if you do have a failure of your system, they're requiring not two tanks, but three tanks now in your system. And so you will be required to upgrade, even if you're in the county, to a more hardened and quality system. I think as the city requires the residents to hook onto it, we ought to give them the confidence and the understanding that the city is going to support their values for the environment.
And which is where I was going to go, is just pull it back into the two changes, the two policies you proposed, and so I'll ask you, okay, so are you good with that? Are those the ones that we want to see in there? Do you want the staff to look at some edits, or are you like edits are?
Come back to it. I mean, we're getting off on the stardust here, but that's absolutely something to focus on.
I heard Mike offered that they're required under state law to treat the water that goes into the river to Class A standards. I was not able to find that language in the codes that I referenced, so I will take your word for it. And really,
I don't know if it's Class A standard, but I'm recalling what I'm familiar with from Snoqualmie, what they do. But I know that we do have minimum state standards for water quality that we will have to meet. And I think our concern is just pigeonholing ourselves into a particular technology when another method may be just as environmentally friendly.
Sure. Do you feel that by this proposed policy, it goes to a targeted solution? Because that was my intent.
I'm concerned about removing the river as the primary and secondary discharge point, because that... One of our obligations, again, is flow, to make sure that there's enough flow in the river to protect for the downstream salmon. And
that's kind of tough. I would rather maybe, is there a way that we could implement best available science for, you know, it's...
So, to my research, it was the gasification system that takes the solids. It uses the gas to power the heater that, you know, converts it all into usable manure, and then, you know,
towards a particular solution.
But I'm just saying, like, so that to me is some of the best available science, because you get energy efficiency because it powers itself, but you're not using anything from your demand, right? Or you can create energy back. back into the grid because it usually generates more.
So how about this as a suggestion that we go with the language as you propose and allow staff to come back with suggested edits if they find something better.
Another way to look at this is to think if you were being asked the same question by a tribe member, how would you respond to the tribe and then ask you this question? The cities are all at risk for this, having now tribes and tree tribes on threatened endangered species. We all know that. There are gays and bombs everywhere. And we need to protect the city. And you ask this by looking at what exactly what Gary suggested we do. Protect the water, so we have to respond to a court, tribal court.
I think your main concern is the amount of water in the river goes to two concerns, is sufficient flow for the fish, but also water temperature. And what I understand from the Department of Ecology, water temperature is even more important than the bacteria that we might put in the system by Class B or Class C water. Because our fish are cold water fish, and the higher temperature causes algae and herbs there.
Absolutely, but I don't know if one's worse than the other. I just know you're absolutely right. Both are equally very important.
So your main concern is primary and secondary. Our primary source, scratch secondary, would that make it a little more amenable?
Maybe what I would suggest is instead of saying require the city to use, explore environmentally preferable alternatives or something like that, that doesn't, somebody doesn't come back and say, well, your policy said this.
I was going to consider even time boxing it, you know, within 15, 20 years. It's not a today.
Truthfully, what I think what we need to do is bring this back. You know, I mean, we don't oversee the wastewater treatment plan. And I can't say we're the most up to speed on what would be the best next generation wastewater treatment plant. So therefore, what is the best language tonight?
So after Tuesday, you can get that
so
answer.
So I think if you want to go with adding some language of this nature, we probably should sit down with Public Works and those that do, maybe our consultants that have been working on our wastewater treatment plant, and have them suggest some good language that will kind of accomplish what you're looking for, but also allow flexibility to explore different types of avenues or not limit us to explore those. So, that would probably be the best avenue.
So again, my suggestion is that we accept the proposal with the caveat that staff comes back with better information. So
well,
if you've got something moving forward. Is that okay?
Yep.
Okay.
Admin, we'll vote.
Make them want votes.
So, but I'll throw this other piece on the table. So the controlling body is DOE, right? They're the ones that say, come on high, this is quality and this is not. So we're always trying to meet their guideline.
Yeah, we did run this by Don DeBerg today from Public Works, and he said he felt like 3.8 was kind of redundant. We're already doing that because
yeah.
we have these regulations. Right. 3.7, he said, I guess he kind of was agreeing with the sentiment of if we use a little bit different language to not, you know, say that it can't be done this way, and then his other concern being that we do have the obligations to put water back into the river. If we don't do it via the wastewater treatment plant, we're going to have to pump it out of a well, and that's going to be very, very costly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And it doesn't help us meet environmental goals.
So that's where I think with the engineer discussion about how we can maybe for a period of time we're going to have a lull, but you eventually take that water and find a way to recharge the wells versus the river. I don't know.
Well, my last comment on it would be is I'm always cautious to just defer to X federal agency or whatever, because often they're setting the low bar, not the high bar.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're setting the minimum. And what we're saying in this city is we're not about the minimum. We're about making sure that we're doing the right things, the best things. So that's our vision. We may not realize the vision, but that's the vision.
I think, you know, my next thought is, well, how do we advertise the, you know, awesome rapids on the Middle Fork and take the South and North Fork as quality trout rivers. You know, do you want to fish by the wastewater plant, or do you want to just fish the river?
Where the fish are.
Okay, but so the DOE thing, the reason I brought that up was to say, I've got to believe this is happening already. So we've got the spec sheet, if you will, from DOE about this is what you need to meet to qualify for X. But aren't we pretty much consistently trying to exceed what their requirements are? I mean, at every bullet, mm-hmm. at every point that they've got it, aren't we kind of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, typically we say meet or exceed.
Yeah.
But you can get rid of the meat
because
you
yeah.
have to.
Yeah. Okay. We're good on that. Anything else?
I just a word smithing on page 7, line 39. It should be encroach, not encroach. They probably added activities and they didn't modify encroach. Mm-hmm.
Good catch. So once.
Is encroaching? Encroaching? Did you say encroaching?
No, pick it up. It's encroach.
Anyway.
Yes, yes.
Okay, here's Soul. Moving on. Comprehensive plan land use element. That's the last one.
So, do you guys want to make a motion on this then, subject to us checking further on those policies?
Well, let me just clarify. In my mind right now, the only thing we're checking on is the wastewater treatment plant one. And the special consideration we have looked up. Do we have an answer for that? Is there anything else? So it's just the wastewater treatment plant, assuming you guys...
Yep. Yeah, I thought you guys were asking to wait. So I'm happy for us to take a consideration to wrap it up. But that means then we'll open it back up if you come back with proposed changes.
Or we can bring it back with the full package.
Well, what I would actually, since we're to the point where we're down to the two that you proposed, that we need to wordsmith this, what would be nice is if you guys could let us know if the rest of the document's good. What we'll do is we'll just bring back those two things to really keep the next time we talk about this meeting mm-hmm. or this issue succinct. So we'll bring those two back, and you guys could. So really, you're making a recommendation on the document with this coming back for final consideration as a whole. That's one way to look at it. Or
well, I want us to.
I haven't had the time for the whole package.
Oh, okay.
To I think this gentleman's
ladies
agreement that all we're looking at is these last two policies.
Yeah.
If that,
that's
okay. Right.
Okay, then we'll just wait.
Sorry.
Or we can move it forward with the way they are there.
So on paperwork and size of packets, do you guys want us to reprint the whole packet or just the any changes? How would you guys prefer? I know it gets
I have no need for all the paper.
Yeah, so the changes do.
Just the changes.
So,
okay.
So
that
as long as they match up with the page numbers here, we can go there
perfect.
Easy.
Okay.
But please don't send us a bunch of changes that we don't know where to go.
Right. Do you want to go over the, since we have it up, the special considerations?
Yeah,
language?
It basically says this language imposes three different requirements. If the requirement to use best available science when protecting critical areas, it's also the requirement to preserve and enhance the fisheries. And then the last one is the requirement to adopt development regulations that protect the function of the critical area. So it's basically giving cities the direction to do those three things in their critical area regs. And I can email that little blurb to you guys if you'd like with the, so you can see it. Or we can project it.
My initial thought is going to be that, yes, I think I like the more specific because I think it goes to the direct point in which I was striving for. I think best available science and with all the best intent isn't getting to where I think it ought to be.
This is going back to the word of special consideration. Sorry.
Yeah, off a different
topic. This was Dick's.
This is addressing Dick's comment.
Yeah,
about
so sorry. Yeah, because sorry.
It was good because it wasn't matching up.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking you were addressing.
Yeah, sorry about that. I thought
sorry. Okay, so the question
so were you following that, Dick?
Yeah.
What Jenna was reading was in reference to.
Well, actually, Gary asked me a question, and I thought. Gary and I are on.
It's Tuesday in Toledo. Do you guys know that?
What's that?
It's Tuesday in Toledo.
Sorry, Gary.
So it falls under best available science and critical area regulations. Requires local governments to include best available science. In addition, local governments shall give special consideration to conservation or protection measures necessary to preserve or enhance anadromous fisheries. So that language is directly from this RCW. And then the 3 points on how to do that to meet those requirements is what Jenna went over. So
it's pretty detailed when you go to the actual statement.
So it sounded like based on that, we confirmed that it is language in there. Do you want
specifically
RCW cited?
Yeah,
it's coming out of.
Sure.
Can we call it good?
We can do that.
Okay.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. So next time we'll expect to see, as far as language goes, only anything that you might suggest different than the two new policies.
Yes.
And then we will vote the entire chapter.
Sure. And you guys could bring your this packet back. And for those of you that haven't had a chance to thoroughly go through it, if there's something else that you see in between now and then, you can ask questions.
Jen,
or
you're already agreeing you're not going to find anything new, right?
I will definitely critique it without second.
Despite the fact that I rewrote the open.
Well, I like that. I really like the fact you brought it in. And just,
yeah.
That's well done.
I'm trying. Gary got there by email. I didn't think I was timely enough. Okay. All right.
By the way, I'm going to ask a question I've asked a couple times and haven't gotten an answer to. I have replaced my computer, and where I had saved the link to our email server. Can somebody tell me what it is?
Did you get the email I sent you with the to your personal email? It sent it to
your
personal.
Yeah, I know what you meant.
To your personal.
But no, I didn't get that either.
It didn't go through. Okay.
I don't think so.
I will.
It's yes. North Bend
I'll
something.
Uh-huh. I can write it down and give it to you.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
Great.
I just don't want to forget another
thing. So moving on. Okay. Item number 5: Comprehensive Plan Land Use Element, Land Use Designation and Zoning Workshop. So before we launch into where you guys want to go, I'll ask for someone from the public just to speak on this agenda item. Mr. Richmond, did you want to say anything about this particular item?
This particular item, I'm not equipped informed to.
Okay. All right. Okay. So how are we starting?
Okay. So you guys kind of, what we did in your packet is kind of provide some goals. Goals 2 and 3 might be aggressive for tonight. We know that. So that's kind of the goal of the workshop, let's say, series, because we're assuming we're not going to come to a conclusion tonight. But what we really want to do, because we've heard from you guys about, you know, the desire to look more globally at the city rather than wordsmith the document. So let's look globally at the zoning. In the end, what we need to do is we need to really talk through the pros and cons of any zoning concerns we may have, and then ultimately get to a point where we're going to have consensus on the zoning. Because until you guys give us kind of the consensus of the zoning, we can't do the capacity analysis based on the zoning that you're going to recommend. So it's kind of a two-phase approach right now. Yeah, we need to get you guys to a point where we understand really what you see the zoning to be. And then we have a little next step to finish that chapter to give you the capacity based on that if you propose zoning changes. So tonight what we really wanted to do is have a pretty open discussion. We brought the zoning maps, large-scale zoning maps, and we thought we gave you kind of some starting points to talk about that we know we have some zoning issues. But we figured this topic or this conversation would, you know, provoke a number of different things from all of you. And then we'd go from there. So really, tonight's kind of an open forum to talk about any pros and cons of any ideas we come up with. Before we go there, though, as you know, are they all aware that we're losing Megan? Okay, Megan has decided to move back home. She's from Texas, and she's going to go back home, which is great. We're happy for that. We're sad we're losing her. She's actually been an incredible addition to our team.
That's bullshit.
I know. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I wanted you guys to see, because when I heard this, I panicked. Because she's one talent that she's got that is absolutely above and beyond is that there's a design element that she brings to the table. And so she's been working really hard to reorganize the whole comp plan into that format that you were talking about that's user-friendly. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually contract with her and keep her on board for the formatting. And so what we thought would be helpful, because right now you guys are reading all the documents or all the elements in its current format. Meanwhile, she's changing all the formats to bring it back in a really much more user-friendly format. So she's going to show you what she's done with the transportation element. So you have that in your mind as we work through all these other elements. So in the end, that's the format that you're going to be ultimately approving for all of them. So do you just want to spend just a few minutes kind of showing
sure.
them how you've done this?
Yeah, and I apologize. This screen is not, you mean, it kind of looks a little blurry there. But what this is
move the machine back.
I'm not a rant.
This shows. This is
yeah, there you go. Where's your
report? Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Would that move back when it gets bigger?
Yeah. Pull the whole machine back.
Yeah.
There you go. Helps. Is it a little better? Mm-hmm. Okay, perfect. What you have here is an interactive PDF. So it's almost like a book. You can flip through it. You can also zoom into it. Normally on your screen, you'd be able to, all this would, does this help? It's basically something that's just interactive. So you can go through and you can click on a link, which I know that's something that you guys mentioned. I don't have one here to give you an example, but it would automatically have that for you. So you would just go and you click it and it would take you to whatever website it's directing you to automatically. And currently that's not something that we have with just the PDF option.
So Megan, at the bottom are the pages in the book mm-hmm. and the right pane is what is that?
That right now is advertising. So that's not, I think, that's not related.
North Bend Recycle Day.
Right. So I've just basically taking the transportation element, which was has already been adopted, and there aren't going to be any changes to that, and just tried to make, you can see our maps here, just a more friendlier version that maybe
yep.
be more excited to read.
I think you showed a moment ago that you can then zoom in on the maps,
right? Right, you can. Uh-huh. You can zoom in on anything, and you can search. You can also, there's a, let's see. I'm not used to doing this on a.
Mm-hmm. Can you go through Google Earth on the maps?
Google Earth?
Look the same.
Ooh, I don't know. I could try to figure that out. But
I prefer Bing, thank you.
Whatever. going from a map text to a photographic text with the delineation still on it.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
Imagery.
What you mean by that?
So having an imagery layer?
Yeah, exactly.
We could put a link, yeah. I mean,
that may be a breach.
Yeah, we could see. But this is just, we can also have it in the classic PDF form if this isn't something that you like or the reader doesn't want to use this. There's different options on how you can display it within ISU. But this is just...
What's from the outside users' perspective? They're just downloading
It's all online, so it's just it would be on our website, right? And it would, and this is, there are multiple companies that we can use to do this. Currently, this is ISU. It's free, and it'd be free for the city to use, and we can edit it at any time. Really simply, it's just as simple as you have your Word document, you make it into a PDF, and you upload it, and then everything becomes live through their software.
So then beyond your brilliance to know how to make this happen, and Jenna's very smart move to make sure she contracted so that you can do this, eventually that project comes to an end, and who's going to maintain it?
Well, I can provide directions. It's promised. It's very
we've
it's very
sat
simple.
Enough together that I think the I guess three of us left plus the replacement of Megan will obviously have to be bought in into this. You know.
But this was all used to create this format. It was also used with InDesign. It's a lot, you know, something I've learned, and most people coming out of school don't know how to use.
But Megan's going to give us old words in it. InDesign.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up at the moment. But
I didn't say that.
So they're all going to be pros, hopefully, by the end.
We're getting trained by our newest player.
So.
And then by putting it in the column format, I think you were saying you just reduced the
size
of it.
Yeah, it reduced the
size substantially.
Even though we added pictures and things like that and graphs.
It was
right.
A fantastic jump in generation. So
yeah, and you can search within the document, which is probably the best thing about it.
And it'll be a link on the front page.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
So you cut off the explosion site. Come on.
Oh, I
Jenna,
guess.
I just want to say thank you very much for this opportunity for getting in.
I want to mention one thing. If you guys, we need as many pictures as we can get. So if y'all have photos, I don't know if Ms. Sidgwick would use them for sure or not, but if y'all want to send me photos.
I was going to say,
we're not going to send anybody out there listening to
that. Yes, that's true. All those
are,
anybody's welcome to send.
And are you making sure that you're documenting permission of use?
Correct. Right. And there will be a little note at the bottom saying that this courtesy of.
Okay. You're looking for street views, you're looking for storefronts,
anything. Pedestrian views, traffic. Every element's going to have photos in it, so you can think of a good match for that and send it in.
Okay. Great. Well done. All
right. Okay, so we need to pull off we're doing the zoning. You want to lay out the map?
Yes.
This has some very minor updates.
Can y'all see it this direction?
Sure.
Okay. Start out open or not, might be interesting, but there's kind of three areas we wanted to focus you guys on first,
okay.
And then we can go from there.
And these come largely from prior conversations, so prior dockets that were received, things that the planning commission identified in the past that they wanted to address. So maybe let's start out with a more recent one. So Don Torgerson, the planning
Pull up the focus here.
Okay, let's start with that one then.
Oh, Tanner? Okay.
This is 4th Street.
Yeah.
So this is just a minor one. 4th Street, you can see the blue there. That is right now within the neighborhood business zone. And functionally, 4th Street serves just as a continuation of the rest of the downtown area. So that's 4th Street's where our office is, right across the street from the library. There's also a tax accountant office, a couple of houses. But it really doesn't serve any different function or use than what the rest of the downtown commercial zone functions as. Neighborhood business zone, in comparison with that, is more of a service type of zone. It allows for things like car repair, some storage type of things that aren't allowed in the downtown commercial zone, as well as residential uses. But we felt that because 4th Street, the north side of 4th Street is functionally the same as the south side of 4th Street, we felt it would be better just to make that part of the downtown commercial zone.
Okay, so neighborhood business is what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's an area to be identified on land use as commercial areas because the city sees these areas as further opportunity for job creation and development. Okay. So downtown commercial is specialty retail mixed use development, multi store development.
Mm-hmm. Both allow a variety of commercial and residential uses. The focus just shifts a little bit more towards the retail within the downtown commercial and a little bit more towards the service within the neighborhood business.
So, with the slant in downtown commercial is decidedly towards retail and certain streets. I get where you're going. That makes sense to me. Other than concern of not wanting to give the impression of not interested in sort of businesses there. Car repair, no. But the tax accountant
would be fully allowed within downtown.
I can kind of go through the list because you'll see it's a lot more. It's almost to me scale oriented. Like, for example, in the neighborhood business, a car wash is allowed. DC is not. A paint and body shop is allowed in the neighborhood business, not in downtown. Service and repair of cars is allowed in neighborhood business, not in DC. Snowmobile sales. Let's see here.
So I'll jump in now and kick it back up a level. So let's, instead of talking about half of the block, what's the purpose of our downtown commercial? What are we trying to do? And is it right? Is it defined appropriately now? We say many times that we want to really encourage retail use, at least in particular on North Bend Way and a couple of the cross streets. Should we really be looking at the downtown commercial zone and breaking it up?
I thought you were talking about the neighborhood business zone. You're talking about something that I've always thought was missing in towns like North Bend. That is, in fact, little neighborhood markets. Not the meat market type thing, but basically packaged goods, some fresh fruit, fresh produce. Convenience store, not a 7-Eleven thing, but clearly a very obviously a tailored kind of store for low impact, high
use. Well, or why not fisher goods that you've got downtown in Sioux, specialty grocery.
You could certainly include that, but I always equate a lot of volume when you get that specialty needs, but I think about the tax auditor, the tax office, the dry cleaner. Cluster of smaller shops that people just could walk to, walk back.
Are you talking about,
yeah.
I want to clarify, are we talking about the downtown commercial zone right now or citywide?
I was looking at the neighborhood zone, citywide.
Yeah, okay, where the residential parts
of
the neighborhood are, okay. Mm-hmm.
off the top of this little board here, there is a keener rural focus by not having these smaller operation. Not a really good competing with the big box stores. If you want to buy for a 2 week supply of your big family, that's fine. But for the homeowners and apartment dwellers that have small refrigerators and whatnot, they just fill up every other day. It becomes a very attractive opportunity for smaller neighborhood stores. I think we're missing that.
So that type of use would be allowed in both the neighborhood business and the downtown commercial zones. So what it would be is then expanding it to some of the other zones, maybe subject to some performance standards to keep it from turning into your conventional 7-Eleven. So things about design and the size and parking, things like that.
You might even have the design mimic the design of the community of that zone, the neighborhood zone. It's a ranch-style frame operation to keep them looking the same. I thought that this was a sentimental view of mine, but I'm realizing that it's not. It's actually more contemporary than I even realized. But it's usually found in more urban communities, more of these food deserts. But you even realize that they need to get back into their business and have a small local source of people to buy fresh food. Why not out here? I'm beginning to realize that if I go to a small market, I'm actually establishing a myself in the community, in talking to people, and seeing them around the streets. It adds a flavor of community that we don't have right now.
So the question is, as Mike was pointing out, those types of businesses are fully allowed within those zones. So when and I agree with you in the expression of, gee, wouldn't it be nice to have that? So the place that that I would see going to that is, are there ways where we can encourage one type of use over another? And I think it goes back to what I said a minute ago, is should we be looking at different type of site in certain areas of the downtown in particular that would favor a certain segment of our retail over service businesses, and therefore have protections for service businesses in certain areas over others?
I think there's a little enhanced richness into the downtown core by having these neighborhood businesses very obviously available in the downtown block area that we have here.
So because I think this is a really good conversation about providing these small little markets within residential areas. But maybe we should start with kind of just a small discussion of what is the geographic area of the downtown commercial. Because in the end, it's from the South Fork to 4th Street, and then it's from the bridge, North Bendway, South Fork, to the roundabout. So it's really in any direction, three or four blocks. And within that three or four blocks, we have our downtown core. Okay, so our downtown two-block core business district, and also QFC. And that downtown commercial core, there's quite a bit of options for that walkability to a market to grab your milk and your fresh fruits. I think what I'm hearing you bring up is more potentially, like I wrote it here, just because as we get out into the conversation of our residential districts, it sounds like you're bringing up more the idea of having that small market on a corner in the residential district where you might live on Maloney Grove, and why have to get in your car and drive to downtown when you could walk a block or two to the local little market, grab some milk and coffee and walk home, have a conversation with your neighbors there, and have build more community around these small little
towns. Right. Stuff like that.
Yeah, so I think that's a great conversation to have as we get into that residential area, right? And what we had thought might help facilitate the night would be to start with certain areas of town. And so we thought the downtown core we might start with. So I'm just wondering if we kind of table that topic until we get out to where we don't have the commercial core. and then dial in more on your downtown core. What, you know, what it is, what do you, kind of going back to what Rob was asking, is what do we see in that 3 or 4 block radius? It, you know, we've always, it's so far, the 20-year plan has been a mixture of commercial, you know, compatible commercial with residential.
Okay.
Right. Or small, you know, kind of like a downtown Snoqualmie, or, you know, where you have small residences, typical and more historic nature neighborhood within 2 blocks of a commercial district. Okay.
Another question within that is transformation within the small neighborhood, small town areas. As the town grows, you see it happening in Snoqualmie, it's happening here. More and more of what were the single family homes that were mixed right into the downtown convert into businesses, service or otherwise. Right? And so is it important to us to maintain a mixture of housing? We're going to probably have to put in specific protections for the housing. Whether they're going to convert, they're going to go to the highest and best use. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that we should be looking to protect them, but I'm saying that's something you've got to think about.
The other point is, if we have downtown commercial where you can have increased stories and condos or some kind of living above, is the city willing to preserve open space elsewhere to, you know, one, you have density in one area where you can preserve open space and rural character in others?
Which takes us back to the notion of transfer development rights.
If it's helpful, go ahead.
I don't see using the development tool of open space to get density in other areas is critical. So you're not giving up anything by heading for the park somewhere else and making for the lack of space on the land. We expect the current density. But the density, I'd like to see at least run a little shit less than both the commercial and murdering people out of the street. But, you know, something about people on the street that really establishes a neighborhood. Really good. I mean, I see that more and more. I like being around neighbors with just people. Mm-hmm. Connecting and walking to where they might need to go rather than hopping in the car and driving around, like you said.
So you and Rob actually are saying the same thing. Rob's kind of asking the question, if we want people to live within our downtown core, do we need to think about protecting a little bit of our housing stock? Because right now it's zoned such that every home could turn into a commercial if that.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, right now, when you're looking at the permitted use chart, residential is allowed, but so is commercial, and it's up to whoever purchases that piece of property to decide whether they're investing for a home or they're investing for a dentist office. So you're kind of saying the same thing, because what you're absolutely right. To have a part of your community downtown commercial has to have people living within. You know, that was the big death to downtown, was people moved out of downtown and the suburbs and came into work and left, so it was dead at night. So we do have different, our downtown core allows the multifamily, it allows quite a dense, and we also have the height.
Does it allow height?
We even allow up to 45 feet, which is actually, because you got the beautiful, beautiful mountain in your backdrop too, and that starts competing a little bit. So we really have done everything that's probably, I would feel, adequate to inspire density to downtown. Question is, how do you maintain that? And will it naturally maintain? And that was kind of Rob's question. That was kind of your question. Do we need to worry about the housing stock?
All the conversations like you said, we're getting here. I love the conversation, but I always come back in my mind to the same point: is our role and those people who give us input's role is to say, okay, what's the block? Tell me the rules, and then I'll adapt to those rules. We're looking at an area that, in my first snapshot, said, okay, that's an area that's
neighborhood zone. It also borders a huge swath of the trail. It's got some funky narrowness to it on one end and very functional wide space on the other. If we flip that over into downtown commercial, my initial thought is it's just going to keep somebody from doing something in the downtown existing commercial. It's not going to do a lot else other than that, certainly in the beginning. So my overview is to stop expanding and changing and tune in what we have. We might even say there's a little bit less commercial, shift it around to the point where it stays stable as opposed to this constant, people don't know what's going to happen next. Mm-hmm. I'll even point out to say that I think the city made a mistake. I'll say this now. The city owned a building adjacent to the planning department, a little white little house. For whatever reason, cash flow, etc., they decided to sell it. But it put, whenever the city does whatever it does next with the planning development building, we've lost an opportunity, I think, to kind of work that whole block into something that befitting of what's across the street from the library, that huge structure that's a kind of an anchor for the area, and the trail, which I'm always thinking trail when we talk about the city here, because that's a huge piece that we certainly don't want to forget about. Imagine coming off the trail on your bicycle right in the neighborhood zone there and popping in for a cold beer and getting back on the trail. You could do that if the zoning allowed it.
The zoning does allow it.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get. That's what I'm trying to say. You go to commercial, and now all of a sudden, it makes the highest and best use is for somebody to put an office park there, and that goes away. Now you really nobody's interested in the trail anymore. Relatively.
Are you talking about?
Speaking. I'm rambling on. I apologize. Hmm. But as you change the zone, 2 points. You lose somebody who was focused in the zone that we had, because now they've got another place to consider, and in that particular area, because it's a butt to the trail, I'm not so sure the commercial needs to be right on the trail.
It already is. That's another, just the neighborhood business zone instead of the downtown commercial zone.
We professionally recommend that this goes to D.C., and the reason is because D.C. has less of the uses that are allowed in the neighborhood business actually would probably not be as compatible with that recreation, like car repair and things like that. So if somebody right now wanted to come in and locate next to us in the White House and do a car repair, we'd have to deal with it.
I think the main thing is to what you're expressing is more toward retail use.
Yeah.
And that's really what staff's recommending is what slants it more toward retail use.
My first point is change. Right. We've got a downtown core that a stranger coming into town, a downtown core drives through, goes, what the hell's going on here? Right? I'm not interested. Right. I just came in from Toledo, to use my other example. I came in from Santa Clara or wherever. I'm an investor, and I drive through downtown North Bend, and I go, what the hell's going on here?
So
it's because of the water moratorium. I can explain that if I have a chance, but I question us expanding from what we already have because of what's not happening with what we have.
If I read the description of the downtown commercial, I don't know if it's clear to everybody, but alternative where multi-story development will be permitted to include residential and or professional offices uses above the street level. It says by promoting and enhancing commercial land uses within the historic or traditional downtown area, redevelopment activities will also be encouraged, which can propel North Bend downtown forward to meet the challenges of the next century. Now, what you're describing, tell me if this matches it. A neighborhood commercial zone provides for attractively designed medium-scale shopping areas that offer convenience goods, professional and business services, and personal services for the daily needs of nearby neighborhoods that serve as neighborhood gathering places.
Say your question again, because I think you're...
Does this make what you're saying more compatible with life along the trail? So, a neighborhood commercial zone provides attractively designed medium-scale shopping areas that offer convenience goods, professional and business services, and personal services for the daily needs of nearby neighborhoods, and that serve as neighborhood gathering places.
Yes, to the degree it meets the commercial description, because I'm arguing that we have enough right now.
downtown core commercial. We have enough. Adding that chunk of land to it.
Just to clarify again, though, that that is already commercial and already establishes, it's just as many commercial uses as the downtown.
Am I not reading the codes or colors correctly? Is that what I'm doing?
Well, the neighborhood business is a broader commercial.
Right.
But this is what we're talking about. Where's Ballarat? Right here? Mm-hmm. So this right here is that little new office building.
Yep.
Then you got our office building. And then you got the white single family house that was just sold. And then you have the tax.
Mm-hmm. This the right.
Yeah.
It's not showing the parcels.
Yeah, it's not showing the parcels. Okay, so then you have the tax person, then you have single family. If you know, like say that kind of house on the corner that might redevelop sometime at some point. Wanted to, they could actually do some different uses that might not be as compatible as the rest of your downtown commercial and residential mixture. So we think the downtown commercial zoning fits better for that.
And with the trail. So
yeah.
An auto repair
yeah.
shop, for instance, wouldn't be a good fit right next to the trail.
Yeah.
But the more residential and retail type of uses, which are more geared to the downtown commercial zone,
the downtown commercial does not allow auto repair.
No.
I mean, that was a funny pick, that concept out of the blue, I guess. Auto repair out of other things.
Other than grandfather.
Mm-hmm. I guess maybe let me be very basic and say my interpretation of commercial zone, you would down zone to get to the neighborhood. It would be a down zone. Right, less density, less flexibility from the commercial use. So
they're both commercial zones.
Okay, but you see why I'm hinting they're commercial, but only because you're allowed to do commercial business, right? That's not...
The neighborhood business, again, is trying to get to that idea that we're trying to cluster these areas to make it service for the neighborhood.
Yep.
But that may be, that title may be a little misleading. Because
yeah.
I think the use within that zone is more service business. I don't know if that's a better way to call it. It kind of loses that.
I think that's a great point, which is, if one of the pieces that I was trying to lay out in my questions, if we've lost the definition, if we've lost the goal, what was the intent of neighborhood business? If it's somehow been diluted or we missed the mark, and as I, what I just heard you said is, well, it's a collection of service-oriented uses, and that really wasn't what we were trying for. We were trying for a little bit more of what Dick just described in more neighborhood retail-oriented uses. Then we've got the wrong uses matched up with the zone.
Well, let's talk about maybe your neighborhood business, because when you look at where your neighborhood business is, there was kind of like, go back in time, I think it was like 3 or 4 years ago, but out here, this has an overlay, so there's more restrictions on it, like with height and things like that, but you have your neighborhood business, and that allows for multifamily and business to be located out there. So in a way, the zone would enable somebody to live and shop there without having to get in their car and drive downtown. That's kind of the concept of neighborhood business. Everything from your dry cleaner to your coffee shop. It also allows for a little bit more flexibility in some of those more, like the car repair, which might not necessarily be your retail shopping core where you're trying to create a tourism look and feel. As you come into town, there's two spots that became neighborhood business, and this is before our time. Now, these are probably zoned that way because when you go down 8th Street, there's businesses there, okay? Highly encumbered by wetlands and things like that and shorelines. This is not going to ever redevelop too heavily, but it's still reflecting business there. Then we have this kind of odd line that we're talking about here, adjacent to heart and core of downtown. The heart and core of downtown, what we want to create here, is a destination for tourists and your citizens. To do that, you don't want to have car dealer or car repair, and I mean, you don't want to have heavy, you know, higher-oriented uses like that. You want to create that tourism feel. So over time, that's what we've been zoning for. go out of town here, and this, long about 3 years ago, we kind of amended a lot here to really kind of create what we thought would be a little neighborhood hub to service a lot of what would happen here with growth and these cottages that would be a higher density. So here, Jamie, remind me, we have incentives that
retail has to be on the ground floor, on the corner.
On the corner. Residential, we incentivize, I think, up top.
Behind.
We really tried to create Mount Si Road to be, over time, a real little neighborhood hub of commercial and living, and people living there. And then servicing, so all of these people could walk to it. Okay, so you got walking here. Everybody living here can walk to their services. Everybody living here could walk to their services. Again, out here, we have this kind of, we'll talk about that later, but kind of same concept. Then throwing Dick's concept into it is, what happens if I live down here?
Yeah.
Can't walk, this is a long walk. So what if there was a nice little corner market here that I could buy my milk? Okay, that would probably, there is actually, I think the tree farm has a little shop. There definitely is one out here at the cafe, so that kind of concept. So I think your neighborhood commercial business district actually has kind of a purpose. This doesn't seem to fit with what you're trying to do in your downtown core. I don't know if that helps.
No, I always appreciate the history.
Thanks.
The refresher.
Yeah.
Well, so I'll play off of that, Jenna, and say, get it for the piece that was just brought up. Totally don't understand why Tollgate Farm preserved as open space would be zoned for neighborhood business at all.
Oh, no, that's not Tollgate.
That's not Tollgate?
That's the...
Looks like it's sitting there in the...
No, you're talking about off 8th Street? Yeah, that's... there's Dennis out there. There's the brick home.
Right here?
Yep. So
no,
if you come
no,
straight
I'm
across...
I'm looking at the Big Blue's Lodge. That's on the west side of the stream and the...
Right where his
between North Bend Way and 202,
that's right there.
Jim, point at the Big Blue.
Okay,
no.
I was one block low. Okay.
Yeah.
And that block, surrounded by open space. So you see that developing to a degree where a neighborhood hub, at least one of that size, is works.
Are you talking about?
Well, I changed.
Well, that's also referencing both.
I'm going to point. So here, this has the overlay on it. So,
okay.
Is that what you're talking about?
That was the first one I was talking about. But correctly, you pointed out I was too far south and west, east of Tolkien. Yeah. But then I'm talking about the other blue one above, right? And I'm saying huge neighborhood business area with extremely small amount of potential residential surrounded by permanent open space. Is that really
a lot of that area is also highly constrained. So some of that's in the floodway. There's a lot of wetlands through there. So there's not as much development capacity as it looks like the wetland area.
And the blue and that blue area could be developed completely residential too.
Yeah, it could. If it's zoned, you could go 100%.
And that was the idea of the urban separator overlay as well, is that we don't want to see the highest intensity uses out there kind of between Meadow Farm and Tollgate Farm. And so it further limited the types of uses and the intensities of those uses, building height restrictions.
16-hour markets versus 24-hour markets, that sort of thing.
So if you were redrawing it without overlays and without existing uses and political constraints, would you draw it that large for commercial uses? Or would it be mostly residential with a very small pocket of commercial?
That's in the floodplain there. So residential on the floodplain, there's other policies that say let's try to get our densities out of the floodplain.
Okay. But let's build a commercial building. How's that help us?
I don't know if I'm following exactly your question, but if we were to...
Well, if you want less intense uses in this area, and in my mind, commercial of any nature is more intense than residential, then why do we have commercial out there?
We have commercial because we have a commercial hub out there. So what we want to do is foster a successful commercial area. Like some of the interest that we've had shown with investors out there is, you know, sports complexes.
Yeah, that's where Mountside Fitness.
Yeah. So we've had some interest in, like, you know, soccer fields that are actually more like a Starfire, but, you know, those kind of things. We've had interest for a couple multifamily projects, but, you know, so what we've done is we've enabled the proper uses with the limitations on the height, so we keep the view of this mountain to be focused, and I think that overlay district restricts the car repair.
Right.
So
it's also where you've got Youth Activity Center going in.
I'm sorry?
Youth Activity Center's going in out there.
So we've actually, I feel that overlay zone has done a good job attracting the right investors, like the Boy Scouts who put in the Youth Activity Center. And hopefully it'll turn into kind of a recreational hub for investments as well.
The only multifamily we've really heard about is in between the roads, right?
Yeah.
So what are the restrictions in that overlay would you not want applied to any of the other business areas?
Well, let me pull the restrictions up.
Well, for instance, multifamily housing is not allowed within the overlay district, but it's totally appropriate in other areas of the neighborhood business zone.
I thought you said one of the proposed uses was multifamily.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Cottage is allowed, but not multifamily.
Mm, I just said that.
Urban separated. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we love cottage. No, Mike's right. I was looking at neighborhood business. We love adult family home, daycare. That was what
why
that
upper
multifamily did not.
So mixed use and upper floor.
Yeah, upper floor mixed use. So the overlay allows, from a residential standpoint, cottage housing. At 60 use per acre.
What does the question is really what's not being allowed there that you want to think is allowed in another neighborhood business? Because my question is really ultimately going, do we need an overlay of this particular area, or is this something that really ought to be applying to neighborhood business?
There's quite a bit that's not allowed in the urban separator. So most of the automotive type of services are not allowed in that zone. So that's gas stations, parts stores, auto rentals, leasing, repair and service shop. So those are uses that are otherwise allowed within the neighborhood business zone.
So what do you think about auto repair shops and the other neighborhood business zones? Do you want them there? You don't want them there?
Well, again, the focus of the neighborhood business is more service type of uses that wouldn't be appropriate in the higher density residential.
What happens to those neighborhood car repair businesses? They tend to get more work than they can do, so the cars should be in the pileup. And, you know, they're not. They tend to look more like.
Yeah, but I'm not looking to put a judgment on how they're conducting business. It's a needed service. My question is more, where should that service be allowed?
Say, in a neighborhood, I wouldn't want that.
Where you allow the neighborhoods.
It wouldn't be a value.
Within a residential neighborhood or within a business zone, is the question.
Well, the reason why I felt like if they work in the neighborhood business is because when I look at where your neighborhood business is allowed, I think the places they work, meaning car repair, car service, car anything, is definitely this area along Urban Way. You have Napa. It kind of had. They're there. Okay, and it's your arterial. Through town. Where we don't think they are appropriate is out by Meadowbrook Farm in our kind of green space area, hence why the overlay helps. Okay? We don't think they're appropriate on along the trail where our offices are. So then the only kind of, and then here's kind of an interesting corner, you know, I mean, would they be inappropriate here? That's something to think about. And then out here, this is a real interesting spot, and I almost want to say let's not talk about that until we get out to Tanner, because that is a difficult one. So they belong in this area in my mind. They don't belong in town. They don't belong out by our medical farm area. Yeah, but over time everything.
And why don't they belong out there?
Well, they're grandfathered, but do we want to continue with further development of that type of use out there?
Well, that's my question. I'm not getting why it's inappropriate in that neighborhood hub, but it is appropriate in this other neighborhood. I'm not following the philosophy.
In Meadowbrook Farm area, what we've tried to do with the overlay is enable commercial that doesn't have a large need for lighting. So drug stores, you know, car, you know, definitely, like, if you went through the allowed uses, commercial uses, they're a little bit smaller in scale. Or like,
yeah, smaller scale, not as many in and out trips in and out.
If you look at page 27 in the packet, we just cut out the sections that relate to the land use designations and what their purposes are. And so that talks about in section F1, the urban separator overlay being really a separator between the two cities and a kind of a transition into Meadowbrook Farm, Holy Farm, rural type activities.
Is it a responsibility of both cities to manage Meadowbrook Farm? So what goes on with Meadowbrook Farm? Shouldn't that be a cooperative agreement between the cities
and
what goes out there?
It is. But we're not talking about the farm. The farm's zone parks and open space. So we're talking about all the land that abuts that farm and Tollgate Farm. Those are, we're talking basically from Encompass area where the old sheriff's station is down to 202. There's one vacant piece of property to the north of.
This looks like it's a little higher up than that.
No, it's not. So, I mean, in a dream world, this would be Full Circle Farms, Jubilee Farms, you know, I mean, really complementary to our open spaces. Would a Napa or a Oil Can Henry be great next to that? Not necessarily in my opinion.
I think as a matter of policy, we ought to not have maintenance or repair type businesses along the recreational environment. I think one of our key core goals is to create a recreational destination. So everywhere we have a trail architecture like that, we should not be putting use of the distance that we drive from that.
That's actually great.
That's why we're never going to DC chain.
Yeah. That's also exactly, say that again, Megan.
With what you're saying right there, that's one of the reasons why we're looking to change the neighborhood business right up against the trail to DC, downtown commercial.
Yeah.
That would prevent that.
Like a neighborhood business and a neighborhood commercial zone, and differentiate the two what you allow in each one. So in a neighborhood business, it is that retail shop, the bar, the service thing for the surrounding residents, the neighborhood commercial, the Napa Auto Parts, the Oil Henry's, and then we can really dial in two zones. And so you can go along the trail where you want to focus walkability and service for the community versus an oil change store that you want on a major strip. I don't know if that's something that we are willing to entertain, is to change our current zones that we have.
It sounds like you just described the difference between your commercial, downtown commercial, and your neighborhood business. Maybe the word neighborhood business is the problem, because it's really not creating a neighborhood, like, nobody's going to want to live necessarily, so I think that the word neighborhood business is serving neighborhoods around versus your downtown core is a true integration of small business and residential.
Well, within that, part of my point is that when you're describing what you want in a farm neighborhood business, restricted with an overlay. Conversely, you're saying, gee, I don't want an auto repair shop. Well, why do I want an auto repair shop on the corner of Mount Si Road, which is the entryway to one of the biggest spaces we've got? Right? Why would I put it there?
So does it make sense to put downtown commercial more than just the downtown?
That's a possibility.
Because then we get away from overlays.
Can I just give a quick, the overlay process, I know there's different opinions, but just to kind of, one thing that's very nice about the overlay process is when you zone, you can't zone to properly zone a city and have one zone fit all circumstances within the area that you identify. So overlays are a great tool to dial in on the specifics of the area and allow for consistency throughout the city, subject to specific. So it really is a nice tool to dial in on your specific characteristics of a, like the Doldrum Park.
I agree, and I agree that in certain areas that it is. I just think now the opportunity when we're looking at this entire comp plan is our opportunity to correct some of the things that are more consistent than
I really like your idea that the outside intersection, we should be thinking more of the downtown commercial. We don't want the auto parts store.
Mm-hmm. So this is something that's kind of been bugging me for a long time. I look at the map behind me, and I look at cities across the country, all different kinds of cities, and I think we're the longest, skinniest, spread out per capita city I've ever seen. And I know why. It's the rivers and the way things have laid out. But as we're talking about that tonight, overlay my previous point, we almost could create three hubs instead of one, because we have that diversity of space. And if we overlay the concept with, maybe we don't want to force somebody to get in their car to go to the grocery store. If there's enough grocery stores, or there's enough schools, or there's enough convenience items, whatever they need to go do, then we've certainly got the width of space. Maybe not the breadth of space with river boundaries, but I just kind of want to throw that out in the mix of all this, because that's really, if we say we have three cities here, not just one, all of a sudden our zoning conversation stops being a problem.
Yeah. Well, I don't see this problem. I mentioned earlier that we've got a commercial store out at exit 32 now. Everything that's zoned out there is residential. Why aren't we looking at another hub?
So I just floated it out there, and I'll leave it just kind of floating.
It's still getting busier with the beautiful world being approved.
That's
four
Exit
32
is 436.
Correct. I'm coming across
to the freeway. So we have Employment Park. We have neighborhood business.
Yeah, keep coming south, Gary, to the freeway. So I'm talking about the south side of the freeway. There. Right. right there you got the golf course, and you've got a convenience store, and you got a restaurant.
Thank you. I was looking for wrong ends.
Yeah. And on, just on the north side of the freeway, we've got a chunk of, how do you classify them? It's an adult. California.
I think when you get close to the interchange, though, you run the risk of uses that might be permitted within the zoning district that would be highly attractive to interchange type of development, which can get big and heavy traffic and be on the scale of what we might be envisioning for neighborhood type business uses.
Hasn't the Greenway weighed in on that, right? On that intersection is low key commercial?
Yeah, we have a number of policies that we've put into the comp plan with consideration from the Greenway about trying to limit the overall commercial look and maintaining vegetation along the I-90 and things like that.
So it's kind of a handshake on that for the Greenway. That's what they basically sat still for 31 for a commercial.
That's again, though, where there are small scale, like the little market that is associated with the golf course. That's absolutely compatible with what's out there. Okay, it doesn't meet commercial zone. So if it came in today and you tried to permit it, it would not be allowed. So I think that's, those are the types of things where you think, okay, how could we allow something like that, but not open the door to Walgreens, right, or whatever, And the reality is, sometimes it's overlays. You could throw a little overlay over that residential district that says, we're going to allow markets of about 600 square feet or less, serving the local population, and so you're enabling more use of property, but you're not necessarily changing the zoning, so therefore you're not changing the character of neighborhood. Of what's going to be.
Isn't that what you already do though with DC and AMB? We're not talking about putting in another IC or IMB. We're talking about a zone that keeps footprints small, uses restricted. Sounds like there are results.
Sounds like what?
Sounds like DC.
But the DC and the AMB zones don't have the scale of limitation that a neighborhood, 1,000 square foot mini mart would.
You would be opening the door up to quite a bit more. I mean, if that was your intent in that location, like it sounded like it was referring to the Greenway.
So what's the size of the footprint we think is appropriate at the main road?
For what?
Why would that be?
Which interchange are you talking about? The golf course interchange?
Right, I'm saying so. You're making a point of concern for size at the exit 32. And I'm saying you want something bigger at Longside Road more than that. I don't think so.
I don't know. I actually see Mountside Road in North Bend Way a great place to actually, if it was redeveloped with ground floor retail, second story, condos or apartments, looking at the mountain, I think it would be a great place to live and drop down, grab a coffee. And so I see that area. That's a main, pretty, you're on North Bend Way and Mountside Road. And if it was done right, it could be a really great kind of urban core.
I think my concern is that because Mount Si Road, North Bend Way, is more within the city and it's more tourist-oriented, people when they're hiking the destination, they're going to be looking for a different type of commercial service than somebody that's just off the interstate. That's more your Kentucky Fried Chicken, your Subway, your quick in-and-out type of uses that tend to be a little bit more impactful, brighter, harsher on the neighbors. And so if we're going to be allowing additional commercial near the interchange, I think we need to dial in even more specifically to scale and impact and what we might. sign or something.
Hand up, Travis, or you're falling asleep?
I'm just carefully listening. I'm absorbing.
You know, these little pocket stores look nice on, like, on the end of Delsai Road. That's a long road to go over a popsicle. You know, but yeah, convenience store somewhere in the middle of that Delsai Road towards the end where the density is. That would keep people hauling down the right bend of the road for longer than. I like the idea of a recreational type outlets on the right bend of the road, Delsai kind of situation. Tanner, I thought you'd have a takeout, a formal takeout point operation where there's restrooms and changing rooms for the kayakers to set up at the bench right away.
What King County's working So I'm still confused though. So, Mike, I totally get what you're saying. And your focus is about what's coming off the interstate. I'm talking about serving the people who are working. Coming out of Riverbank, coming off of Wilderness Road, coming down from Rattlesnake Lake.
So maybe it's even allowance, I'm just throwing things out, but maybe we allow neighborhood markets within the low-density residential zone and have such specific performance standards that it would be only the type of neighborhood market that I think we all have, you know, the ideal of. The 1950s, cute place that you go to get a popsicle.
Sure that the store that's there is able to be. This is what you guys are describing.
Well, if you guys want right now, like, to think about a neighborhood store zoning program, for lack of a better word, I think what we need to do is come back with some, yeah, I mean, you could do it a couple ways. You could pick strategic locations that says, you know, here's kind of an overlay, we're allowing neighborhood stores in this area. Or you could actually say within your LDR zone, we'll allow neighborhood stores subject to these criteria. Now that being said, you might want to say on corners or where, you know, kind of makes me feel like you need to kind of pinpoint where you want them, because obviously you wouldn't want house, store, house. You want it naturally kind of on a corner, how they kind of evolve over time. So we'd have to probably think about what's the best way to do that from a zoning code standpoint and bring you back some ideas. You're right, we want to enable that store.
Would you enable the store more than you enable the CPA or the attorney or the chiropractor or the daycare? Would there be any difference in where you would want those things to be? Or whatever the long list is.
My question is much more oriented along the lines of what, you know, I heard Dick suggesting. I'm saying I see a natural hub. I'm not wanting to say it should only be this, it should only be that. It sounds a lot to me like our overlay restricted neighborhood business zone. Staff suggesting of going back and thinking about is we've got the huge swath of residential stretching down, you know, toward the freeway, still in the UGA. Is there something you guys want to be looking at there? I don't know what it would be or what it would look like, but when you look at that now, it's the biggest chunk without any.
So what if there was you use the term hub and overlay that with my crazy idea of having three or four hubs in the city because we're so spread out so long. What if there was this pocket, I'm trying not to use wrong words, what if there was an area that we kind of said, hey, look, this is a lot of residential zone, a long way from services according to the zone. And we create the opportunity at certain distances for that zoning to occur to serve that populace that may not yet be there, right? So you create the flexibility. I don't know how you do that, but it would seem to be
fit what you were suggesting. Yeah, because again, it's like we're a really rural setting relative to the urban setting where there truly is still the mom and pop convenience store, walk down the sidewalk. You know, how do you do both? How do you be rural and still have the urban function?
You know, before all the zoning happened back in the 50s and 60s, where you had larger lots, lower densities, and the guy was open up a cigar store right on his property.
Yeah.
And it became one of them.
Yeah, because it worked.
Yeah, that's the definition of rural. It's kind of scattered.
Does that tip really do with the notion of eventually connected?
Not the...
it's 6 year, but it's in the comp plan.
It's in the comp plan.
Say that a different way.
So in the comp plan, but so the very long range transportation plan has the notion of connecting up from, this is south, this over into the Bloomingdale, running through over somewhere, right? Get barrier being crossing the river, of course, and various other Allison problems. But to your point, so if you're trying to think about this big swath of residential and how am I going to get to my little neighborhood convenience store? Well, if our comp plans got in and get the transportation element, this connection, then why wouldn't we be looking at some sort of a neighborhood zone? Mm-hmm. Opportunity can go to residential, but it can be commercial.
The only issue, in, or maybe not, is the residents that are higher up where there's a lot more density right now would have to get their cars to drive, because you're not creating the walkability. Unless you located it a little bit more up.
Well, I don't even know where it should be, but I'm just saying there's your connection.
Well, why not have this parcel and this parcel? You know, that's going to create new business opportunities.
Any of those businesses are going to always want to be where there's traffic. So I think no matter where it is, it's going to have to be in an arterial of some sort.
Well, and just based on our population that the zoning will have, a business of that nature will only be successful if somebody actually is living there and they have a little storefront outside. I mean, outside. Because they're not going to be serving large quantities of anything. So it's really going to be, you know, a stay-at-home mom that wants to have a candy shop, too.
It's called a $5 store.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where bubble gum's a nickel.
Yeah. So,
for the sake of time, I'm kind of curious what we could, what we'd like to do. I mean, we have just probably scratched the surface. So to bring this back to you guys, maybe what you could give us is some feedback on what we had attempted to do was kind of go area by area and try to focus our attention to a specific area just to get kind of marched through the city. We're going to come back with another workshop like this, just kind of open discussion. Is there a format that you think would be more helpful for you to get to some conclusions of where you want to go with zoning and
I almost not sure the discussion either being zone specific or multi-zone specific in a region, and then looking at it as the whole city before we make a decision. So that way you get to kind of look at an area at a time, the number of residents, the services that should support that, or maybe they're not necessary. Maybe we're overthinking too much business, right? It's getting to one part of the question, or from business point of view, or residential, you could zone all multifamily housing, and you could have not done your business zoning right. So your process is, you know, half and half. I don't know which way you go first, or you talk about residential first and then business.
Yeah, I think that's we were looking at the area, because then you could talk both uses, all uses. Like, we could start at the overlay district and almost march east.
We did want to be able to go to a couple other things because we do have a public hearing scheduled for the next meeting. And if we have any kind of idea from that for the next meeting.
Well, we want people to participate in this process, so it's not so much a...
This isn't the end-all public hearing of the 90s. But anyway, what I'm saying is I want to, if there's direction from the Planning Commission on maybe some of these other areas, I want to be able to notify those residents that it's being considered for change.
I think that level of public hearing will have to be another public hearing force, because they're right now still going to be just doing what... I'm assuming the next discussion is going to be somewhere at this level, and then once you guys have some concrete ideas per area, we'll then schedule more site-specific public hearing.
Can I ask a quick question? What's the height limit on downtown commercial?
Depends on the area.
35 or 45.
There's a small section that allows 45.
So it's 45 three stories?
Pretty much. Depending on, yeah.
Because I might want to change some things along the Bendigo to do that.
To be 45? Okay, we'll have to pull that up because right now it was North Bend Way, outside the historic district. Mm-hmm. And did it include Bendigo? No.
Second.
I think it goes towards exit 31.
How do I, other than text, know where
the storage is? Oh, wait. You would have to come to our office and look at a map. You're right.
You know, would be good to add in to them.
My second question around the historic district is, what is its purpose and is it serving us very well?
We're getting to that with some of the edits in the land use element, so we've got a better description of what the point of the historic district is, to stimulate redevelopment of downtown consistent with the character that makes something special.
So, to answer your previous question, I can't answer for the other commissioners here, but I should say where I think we should be hearing the continually driving is the conversation up a little. I don't want to talk about the little piece yet. I want to make sure that we're all on the same page or that we're going down the same path in what's the goal of the different zones that we're applying, and do these different zones match up both with the allowable uses and the intent of what we're envisioning that coming out to be. And until I'm comfortable with that, I can't get to talking about whether or not this corner should be neighborhood business or is it,
I like many of us, I can solve a little corner zoning on that lot. I like to talk about the bigger picture and come down with a smaller lot. So I like to figure it out what we want to be when we get to be 20 years old.
So, you know, maybe what you can help us with then is what is it about what you see right now that isn't what you want to be? Because over the past 8 years that we've been here, we've been in what we've been working to is to enable the growth of the small town character, or maintain that small town character while accepting the necessary growth. So if you could help us like pinpoint areas that you're talking about that have concern, or things that you might be afraid of in the future that you might feel are...
I see Plumas are very much not rural. They're very much small town.
Okay, and what...
And the duplicator, I think, is very much not a rural town.
Like, give me an example of one of the pockets you see.
Well, Cedar Falls pocket, linking up with the other pockets around it.
Okay, so the residential pocket you're talking about.
Those are not rural.
So the density you're...
You're talking the density of the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
Okay, that's it.
The look of the density is not rural. Very suburban.
So why don't we put a topic together that will talk density, residential density?
And that goes back to, again, one of the questions that I had, which was kind of the history of the zoning, and I was thinking particularly residential zoning, and how to do land on four, when to do land on four. And I was actually looking at the land use plan I did for Cedar Falls neighborhood,
So, for next meeting, we're going to talk about residential density. That will kind of, maybe what we'll do is globally look at the city and just look at density, talk about what that means, where we want density, where we don't. Then that's a great topic. So thanks, Dick. And the next one is there. We could talk downtown commercial mix. Is that something that you guys feel is a topic?
Huge. Yep. Definitely want to understand downtown. We've got it sliced and diced a couple of ways, which again goes to the, so should they be specific zones versus overlays? Do overlays work better?
So okay, so downtown commercial mix of uses. Now you've to me the next topic you want to talk about overlays.
Well, no, what I'm saying is when you say downtown commercial, I'm looking at the red box.
Yeah.
What I'm saying, but within that red box is a historic district that I can't see, and we have a preference for trying to drive certain uses to certain places within that. So what's that?
All right, so we got residential density, downtown commercial mix. It sounds like what we want to do is we want to dial in on the purpose of the neighborhood business zone. And it sounds like really determine, does that zone reflect our intent?
And I didn't know that there was a historic district, so if we could find it.
Yeah.
That
was my note. Historic district.
It's been 3 years to get another voice file.
Yeah. And I would add another piece of it, and that is just the concept. It's really easy to build on flat ground. And it's relative to the last 15 or 20 years, it's flying right now. So maybe it's not anywhere near its capacity and where things could go if the economy picks up. But, you know, I wouldn't want everybody to, you know, drive from home to work and work not be here. That's certainly the trend. It's cheaper to build a house out here. People build a house and they commute to wherever they go, drop the kids off in Bellevue, and their life is somewhere else. They sleep here. So I just want to keep that in mind and make sure we're not forgetting how fast things could move as the economy hopefully picks up.
And playing off of that, you specifically were saying about the business zone, but I'm applying it to all the zones. It's like,
I think it has to be larger than just walking to where you work. If you're going to work here and live here, you have to recreate here. If you're going to have a thriving community, you have to have an area to live. You have to have so many different places and places.
Alright.
When's our next meeting?
I didn't do that. I was just noting that my land use plan had a mix of housing in it, and we don't have that within what got built. And it was driven because we had a mix and intent of density. Okay, so are we good with the discussion on land use? I've got some questions and things before we adjourn off of that topic.
I guess I would only ask the staff. I found Redmond's zoning code for their zones pretty user-friendly and easy to understand. It's section 21. But it gives a description of the code, then it talks about heights in a graphical form. In one page, you get a good understanding of it. The ins and outs of our code-specific things make me a little confused when I go from one to the next. And I don't know if there's a way through this process that we can gain some simplification, whether it's increasing the zoning that we have. Some way, just make it more friendly.
already been noticed.
It's been noticed as a public hearing, but what we'll obviously do is make it more of a, any public that shows up will participate in our discussion, like more of a workshop.
Yeah, and so to kind of clarify why I'm doing that, yes, because I'm thinking about the promotion of it and to make sure that there's a lot of push to say, this is what we're looking at, and we really want you to show up and give us your thoughts and concerns.
Yeah, what we could do is maybe supplement our notice next week. What do you guys think? So we're going to give it out tomorrow, but it'll come out next week. We've already met the requirements for notice, so this is more just supplement.
Can you get a notice that the city council made? Kate did an announcement at City Council meeting. This is going on. That is repeated 4 times a day for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And you also call it not just a hearing, but a hearing and workshop, so that it doesn't sound like from the speaker 3 minutes.
Yeah. That's kind of what our code requirement hearing notice kind of says.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about this sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me anything if I wasn't. Curious good on my news. The explosion cleanup is something that you notice about. It's like
insurance.
Sorry.
The ring is still going through all the insurance analysis. So.
They haven't expressed a desire to come in and talk with us, though, so we'll have that opportunity soon.
Yeah, we push that ourselves.
I know that the permits update that was in the packet was out of date. Was it the current one? Work plan review. Can you send us out? Yes. I to let it go. Where we are in the work plan, my guess is we're on.
We're actually inquiring with PSRC. We're going to see what they say about it. We're not moving fast enough to make that deadline, I'm sure. Most likely.
That's kind of what I think we want us to talk about the plan.
Can we meet earlier?
Earlier?
I think this is the right balance.
Like the new?
That's good. I like that.
Great for staff.
New than I.
Yeah, I've got only one more item, but it's a closer.
Good in the order.
It's a good in the order stuff, yeah.
Just wanted to let you all know that the residents of Blue River and River Ridge are going to have a Scotch Broom full day January 14th, which is this Saturday. And so we're also making an effort to contact the school district and surrounding lot owners to help with the area of the Scotch Broom.
Oh, great.
I'm going to father that full flag above that effort.
Well, kudos for your success of getting into Western City going up there.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. Nice, really?
That's really impressive.
Super job.
You're going to Millersburg.
Super.
Dick, do you have anything for the good of the order?
Not tonight.
Tonight?
I'm taking a trip to Iowa next week. It's going to be fucker. Sweet. Got the road trip back for the Badlands.
Badlands. Jim?
You doing another bike?
No.
Oh. I was going to be jealous.
My last goes back to critical information, which is Megan, thank you for your time, really.
Yes.
Kudos. Glad to hear you're going to work with us for a little while and from afar. And kind of myself wish I was kind of going back to Texas with you. Maybe not with you, but back to Texas. That's great.
Yeah.
You've got to tune up your two-step and, were you raised proper?
I'll have to really tune it up, yeah. I haven't done that in a while.
Are you in the Dallas area specifically, or Oscars?
Dallas, downtown Dallas. I'm from inside, the city, and going to be another 5-minute walk to work, so that'll be nice. Just going to be a planning consultant.
Private or
private. Mm-hmm. small, just two of us, actually, for right now. But it should be good, and it's going to allow me the opportunity to help continue to help you guys out with it.
Sorry to see you.
We have to blame you for the rain today. That was not North Bend rain.
That was Texas rain. It was pouring.
After this month, we get to blame it for rain and then go right to the rest of
the I won't hear it. Okay.
All right, motion to adjourn. Second?
I second that.
All in favor?
Sure.
Aye. Good evening, everybody. One plug for we're looking for a youth parks commissioner right now. So if anybody has a good candidate, please let us know.
What's the age?
High school.